everybody. Ben Starr and Kevin O'Donohue here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I just want to get this out of the way. I would be remiss if I didn't start this show by wishing my mother a very happy birthday.
Hey.
Today's my mom's birthday, so I want to send that love out over the airwaves. Yeah. Happy birthday. Wow. And now, on to business.
Very sweet.
We talk about ideas, concepts, and guests. And today we have a guest to help us learn more about a concept that seems to be on the tip of everyone's tongue these days. Joining us in the studio is Manhattan therapist Panthea Sadapur. Panthea generally tends to work with members of the millennial generation, which is a concept, again, that seems to be everywhere you turn nowadays. You hear about the millennial generation. So, Panthea, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure. So, millennials. What do we know about millennials? Well, a much maligned group. I happen to be a member of that group.
Yeah.
Grudgingly so. I don't love the label. I don't always accept it. I don't always identify with it. But I am a member of that group, as are you, Panthea.
I am. You just outed me.
I did.
Well, how are your struggles similar to millennials?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about millennials right now. Generally, millennials are, well, Panthea.
First of all, it's 18 to 34-year-olds, right?
Sure.
So it's not very
specifically defined. It's early 20s to mid to late 30s
okay.
at this point.
Right.
Okay. So millennials are generally the young generation right now that is graduating school, that is in the workforce, that are in early stages of their work life. And it's a unique generation for a variety of reasons. And we're here to talk about that today. We're here to hear a little bit of insight from Panthea, who works exclusively with millennials.
And we want to ask callers to call in who know a millennial, or if you are a millennial.
Exactly.
And you can tell us, what is your big struggle right now? What is the thing that is always on your mind?
So I'll tell you, I got some statistics on millennials to give us a bit of a statistical understanding. But millennials are, I read an article recently that actually called millennials a menacing metamorphosis to the status quo. So this is, as all generations turn, right? The young replace the old, and this is what's happening right now with the millennial generation. And the millennials right now make up about a third of the United States workforce. And that number in the next decade is projected to rise to 75%. So we're about to live
in 8 years, right?
You know, in the next decade, we're going to be living in a society that's pretty much dominated by this generation. And it would be great to start, at least, the process of learning and trying to understand what this generation is about, how they've been raised, what their outlook is on life. And I think we saw the first real impact of millennials on larger society last year with the unexpected rise in popularity of Bernie Sanders, which mm-hmm. was largely mm-hmm. driven by millennials who yeah. rejected the status quo in favor of new ideas or different ideas.
Sure.
Panthea, you work almost exclusively with millennials here in New York City.
I do.
What are you seeing in this generation? What are you seeing as far as their struggles, their challenges, their identities?
Sure. So the main struggles I'm seeing are an extension of the length of time it takes to feel connected to one's own identity. So let's talk about some psychological theories,
yeah,
some
sure.
personality development. Right, it was
identity versus role confusion.
Exactly.
Eric Erickson.
And
sure.
that was adolescence.
Right?
That was around 13 to 18.
Yeah.
That's extended now. It's taking people a lot longer to feel connected to who they are and to feel connected to other people.
Yeah. Yeah. And millennials are often living with their parents still. I mean, many of them are, right? I mean, just given the financial structure and situation that they're inheriting.
That's true.
That they're often stuck back at home with mom and dad. And so it makes sense that they're struggling with issues of growing and growing up,
right,
and taking on responsibility and adapting to the current society.
Right. So nationally, more millennials are living at home with their parents. Yeah. In New York City, it's a little different. Fewer millennials in New York City are living with their parents than elsewhere in the country. But you see people living with multiple roommates.
Yeah. And we're not saying that this is bad or that you're bad for it or you're guilty. I mean, there are complex socioeconomic structures that are often causing this kind of need to move back in with your parents. And sometimes it's a great thing. Sometimes it really relieves the stress on parents having their kids back home. It can be a very positive thing for family. And sometimes it can be very shameful and shaming for the person who has to do it. So one of the things I think is expectations. Do you find that a lot of millennials struggle with expectations from the outside that are not really their own?
Yes, I think a lot of millennials do struggle with expectations from the outside, but also their own expectations. And this is a piece that we don't often think about when we hear about millennials in the media. We hear about their expectations of other people. We hear about their entitlement, which is absolutely a part of this generation.
It's a big word that we hear associated a lot with millennials,
right.
Entitlement.
Entitlement. The other piece of that, though, is internal. Mm-hmm. These people have very high expectations of themselves. Right? Mm. There's a lot of pride, and the flip side of pride is shame.
Sure. What is the expectation? What are they expecting of themselves? You say big things of themselves. They want to be, you know, LeBron James, or,
well,
you know, they all want to be the top of their careers.
Right.
Is it mostly career-driven in their expectations, or are they having high expectations of a love relationship?
So it's largely career driven. I hear that a lot in my practice, but also it's about emotions. So there's this expectation that I should be independent emotionally. I shouldn't need other people.
Emotionally, that's a big one. You know, that takes a long time to achieve. I mean, and for them to expect it and at the same time also have this external pressure of paying the bills and making it in a very confusing world in a very unstructured workplace sounds really daunting. How do you calm them down or take the load off of them on this huge expectation to be, say it again, emotionally
the expectation to be emotionally independent, to not need connections with other people.
Wow. Why would they want that? Why would they want that? Why would you want to be not connected to other people?
Well, there's a lot of fear about that. There's a lot of fear of vulnerability, of being exposed, of showing your inner stuff, that messy stuff that we all have, and not being loved for it.
So millennials are not being loved for it. Do you get them to that place where they get to be vulnerable with you?
So therapy is a practice ground for being vulnerable. Being vulnerable in the therapeutic relationship is a model for doing it in other relationships.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is the paradigm, I have a client, he has huge expectations for himself. He wants, or she needs to stay emotionally independent. They have a lot of social pressure on them. And I have to get them to want to be vulnerable. Is that the paradigm?
So
in general?
Long term, sure. But first, what we want to do is really make sure that we send the message that we understand why it's so scary to be vulnerable. We understand why someone would want to be closed off. Making that okay.
Mm-hmm.
Creating acceptance in the room is what helps people create acceptance of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So think about this. Think about a toddler that's just starting to walk. They go through this phase where they start to explore their surroundings, but then they look back at their parent. They mm-hmm. want to make sure they're there. They need a safe base in order to explore.
Exactly, sure.
So in therapy, we create a stable foundation where someone can just be themselves, and that actually helps them make changes.
I agree, but there are tremendous barriers with millennials. They're so, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, they seem so wired to be competing and being achieving and looking good out in the world. And that's constantly driving them. that for them to be vulnerable and slow down and go to a place where, okay, I can take the mask off and I can all of a sudden connect with, you know, the less stellar parts of myself. I mean, you must spend the first half hour just sort of deflate. Okay, all right, let's slow down. Let's get here, get here, let's get here. And it must take quite a while just to get them there.
It takes a lot longer than half an hour.
It does, doesn't it? It really does.
Yeah.
So maybe we should be talking about what exactly first, what it is that's driving them, and then second, how we can you know, reverse that. Because I think to be emotionally independent, to have this demand on myself, I must be emotionally independent and also succeed in the world, is a tremendous contradiction and very difficult. People need to, you know, if you're competing and you're striving, it's very difficult to slow down and really feel your emotions.
Right.
Feel yourself.
And the competition often isn't even based on a full picture. It's not based on an accurate view of reality. It's often based on very specific comparisons. So I'm comparing myself and everything I know about myself, all of the positive, all of the negative, to just one facet of another person, just the part of them.
What's that facet? Often.
So let's think of social media,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm comparing my entire life story to a Facebook post right. or a picture on Instagram that right. someone else puts up.
Okay. It's a very troubling phenomenon, and it's given rise to this new term called FOMO, F-O-M-O, which stands for fear of missing out, which is a phenomenon that's been exacerbated by social media, because people tend to put their best foot forward on social media, right? When they're posting pictures, they're posting pictures of the highs in their life, not the lows. And they're talking about great events, vacations, milestones that they've achieved. You know, it's rare that you'd see someone go on and post something about their struggle, about their challenges. And we know the millennials have many of these. I mean, this is a generation that came of age against the backdrop of 9/11, of a massive financial crisis that has enormous student loan debts. And all of these things have played a role in forming and shaping and informing this generation's outlook on life. I would say, I'd venture to guess, and I'm sure that there's data out there that could back this up, but I would venture to guess that the millennial generation has a less optimistic outlook than prior generations. Would you agree with that, Panthea?
I would agree with that. We do know that, according to the National Institutes of Mental Health, millennials have higher rates of anxiety and mood disorders like depression, bipolar disorder, than previous generations at the same age.
And are the symptoms because of the economic and social hurdles that they're facing, or is it because of family of origin issues?
So it's hard to say, right? All of these illnesses are multifaceted.
Right.
Right. But certainly being in a climate where it's harder to share vulnerability, that'll add fuel to any issue.
Right. And the Facebook phenomena and the social media phenomena is a place where there is no sign of vulnerability there, right? You're talking about a nice shiny surface where people are presenting the best of themselves, the highest, the most celebrated parts of themselves, and they're not really disclosing or showing, you know, the other side.
Right. People aren't talking about the full picture.
So I think a real good question is, what are these millennials picking up from the social scene subconsciously? Because I think one aspect of this Facebook and everything social media phenomena is the speed at which it's happening. And if you're ungrounded in the first place, if you're part of a generation that is ungrounded, unsettled in the first place, and you're engaged in high-speed activities where you're interacting with people that only presenting the best of themselves, you must subconsciously pick up messages that I have to be a certain way. My identity, since I don't know who I really am, my identity can be shaped. I might as well pick an identity that looks good, that
sure.
is being presented to me, you know, every minute I'm on a screen.
Sure. Let's go back to Ben talking about FOMO. We don't want to be the one left behind. We don't want to be the only one who's...
Yeah. I completely agree.
Is that the fear, being left behind?
Absolutely. That's a huge fear.
If you're just joining us, you're tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM, WBAI. And we're speaking with Dr. Panthea Sadapur. Well, not a doctor, just a therapist.
Thanks for the upgrade.
We've had lots of doctors on recently. Right. So,
but she talks like a doctor.
She does. And we're talking about the millennial generation, which has been known as many different generations. There have been many labels, but the millennial one seems to be the one that is going to stick now moving forward. They've been known as echo boomers because they tend to be direct descendants of the baby boomers, and the swell in the population kind of echoed that of the baby boom. But for a while, they were known as Generation Y because millennials followed Generation X. They've also been called the 9/11 generation, people who were between 10 and 20 years old on 9/11. It still blows my mind that there are college students today who don't remember 9/11. And that was obviously, you know, such a big event that was stuck in so many of our memories and collective consciousness. But the term millennial was coined in the late 80s by authors William Strauss and Neil Howe. And this millennial term kind of competed with the Generation Y term for a while, until it sort of won out in the early 21st century.
Was it hooked up to the worry that the computers would all crash on 2000, you know,
Y2K.
on New Year's Eve?
I'm not sure about that.
I wonder
that
was
it was just related to the fact that these were people coming of age against the backdrop of the turn of not only the century, but the millennial.
Right.
Millennium, the term millennials.
Sure.
And so generally, we're looking at people born anywhere from the early 80s to the mid-90s. That's roughly the age range we're talking about here. And Panthea, you work almost exclusively with millennials here in New York City. And it's great to have you on, great to have you help us shed a little bit of light on this subject, on this generation.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I mean, what can we expect as we watch this generation come of age, grow up, assume larger and larger societal roles, advance in the workforce or not? What do you think we'll see? How do you think this generation will impact society down the road?
So I think we're already seeing a lot of the impact. We hear a lot about friction in workplaces between millennials and older generations.
Caused by what? What do you think is causing that?
I think it comes back to vulnerability, fear of vulnerability. So, for example, in the workplace, millennials often feel that they need to be experts from the get-go.
There's that expectation thing again.
Right. There's that internal expectation.
Right.
And there's a lot of shame that comes with that because that's not how learning works.
Sure.
We can't be experts from the gate.
Right.
There's a learning curve.
One thing I've noticed, you know, and when we take callers, we want callers who have some experience with millennials. If you are a millennial, if you have a son or daughter who's a millennial, or an uncle who knows a millennial, you know, one of the things I see is feedback. They're phobic of feedback. It's almost, you know, if you're over a certain age, they don't want feedback from you. Is that a phenomena? I mean, is that what's happening in the workplace?
That is. I hear about that a lot. And let's think about what might be underlying that. If someone's feeling ashamed about the fact that they're not an expert, if they expect themselves to already be an expert when they've just started a new job, getting feedback from someone else can feel like can be a narcissistic injury to them.
Yes. Okay.
It can feel really shaming because it points out that someone else knows more than them. Rather than that feeling helpful, that could feel threatening.
Hmm.
So one of the things that we can work on that would be helpful to work on in therapy is learning to view your lack of expertise as understandable, as expectable, as part of the course of learning, rather than a personal failure.
And yet we know that millennials often desire that immediate instant gratification positive feedback loop, right? And I think
and
that
if they don't get it in their environment, they'll get it on
social
on Facebook
media.
And on
yep,
the social
that's
media.
That's right. And the difference is, I think a good generation to contrast with the millennials tends to be their parents' generation, which by and large is the baby boom generation. So just post-World War II, people who were born from, you know, the 40s and 50s. The baby boomers are primarily, you know, in terms of work, wanted, you know, desired a strong work ethic and a steady career path. And we see that millennials tend to favor like that work-life balance and that feedback that Panthi was talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good comparison, and, you know, it helps us understand better.
And if you are a parent of the baby boom generation, you can understand your child who is going through this expectation of needing to be an expert. And, you know, you don't need to go to therapy to sort of help them through this exaggerated expectation of themselves. You can say, hey, I'm noticing that you think you have to know everything. You know, you're young. You're not expected to know everything. Slow down.
Right. It just takes having some compassion, right? Trying to understand what might be underlying these problematic external behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So expectation is huge. Being an expert is huge. Needing to be an expert. The narcissistic wound you mentioned is terrific, because if you're so bent on constantly being on top of your game and not getting feedback and not taking input from other people, the narcissistic wound is just waiting for you to slip up and get hit. And
right.
So do you have clients that really come in like from a narcissistic wound? Let's say they go out on a date and their game isn't working on the date.
Sure. So first let's destigmatize, right, this idea of narcissism.
Yeah.
We all have some degree of narcissism. It's part of being a person.
Right.
It's okay. It's not a shameful term.
Good for
term.
You. That's great. Yeah.
Okay? It can spawn self-awareness. There can be positive aspects of narcissism, right? And there can be problematic aspects of it too. So, of course, people I mm-hmm. see come in and have some narcissistic stuff like we all do.
Yeah. It seems like a bipolar lifestyle, that you're either up and you know, energized and happy or presenting a happy face, and then you plummet at certain times because you can't maintain it. And that's what I meant by the narcissistic wound in therapy, where clients are coming in seemingly one way, 1 week, high on their expectations and succeeding, and then the next week really deflated because of the narcissistic wound and the realization that I'm not everything I think I'm supposed to be.
Right. So that any acknowledgement of understandable imperfection feels really shameful, becomes a narcissistic wound. Right. That leaves out the full picture. If we only are looking at our most positive traits on our most negative traits, we're not seeing all of the average range of experiences that we have.
Yeah. So shame and isolation. I would think that this lifestyle must lead to a lot of isolation. Is it? Are you finding isolation, loneliness, a big aspect of your millennial clients?
Definitely. And it's not how you might picture it. So it's not that, you know, these people are staying at home alone and feeling lonely. These are often people who are very socially active, who are connecting socially with friends, who have a full social schedule and are still feeling lonely inside. That's what I often deal with. People who have friends and can't understand why they're still feeling empty.
And what, yeah. So if they talk about a friend, I would suppose that it's not as threatening. If they're talking about a friend's isolation or a friend's loneliness, it seems much easier for people that are already having this big expectation of themselves to talk about that than to talk about their own isolation. Do you find that they're like avoiding talking about their own and will talk about somebody else's isolation or how they're not doing as well as I am? That's a kind of great deflection in therapy.
Hmm. That does come up. That comes up in terms of jealousy, feeling left behind even by friends. So if a friend, let's say, gets a promotion and I haven't, that must mean that I'm a failure. That must mean that I'm doing something terribly wrong. Hmm. That must mean that they're better than me in all areas of their life. It can really easily spiral into that.
Okay, right. We're talking with Panthi Sethapur, licensed social worker here in Manhattan, whose client base is exclusively millennials. We're talking to you about millennials because this is a cohort that is going to be inheriting our workforce if they're not already dominating it. And they have a certain set of issues that they're struggling with. And at the call, you know, at the break, we're going to take callers who are either millennials or related to millennials, know a millennial, and can tell us, what do you observe about them? Just the observation. We're not making any judgments. Obviously, there are many, many good qualities. I think hard work is one of the stronger qualities of this generation. We're not here to sort of label and all the defects of a culture here.
Right. We're trying to get the full view.
And I think you're saying one of the big issues is a struggle with vulnerability, difficulty with vulnerability. And the question becomes, how do we help people who have a difficulty with vulnerability be vulnerable? What do you recommend?
Right. So first of all, we help people to realize that other people share the same feelings as them. Just because they're not talking about it doesn't mean it's not part of their experience.
Okay.
So modeling vulnerability helps other people be vulnerable. And that's where connection happens.
So they need to be in a place where they can do that, though, because they're not doing it with each other, right?
Right.
So modeling vulnerability is a big, big help. Do you model it for them? I mean, like, would you say, if I were somebody struggling with you, I'd find it really difficult to say such and such to my parents or such and such to my friends?
Sure. So validating when it's hard, letting them know. It's hard because there's a lot at stake. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't take the risk.
Okay, right.
So this comes up with friends. This comes up in dating. And it comes up with parents.
Dating.
Dating's a big topic.
What happens on a typical millennial date?
So, typically, especially in New York City, I think dating is often online. Right. So it's through
starts
apps.
That way.
Right.
They're not dating online. Right?
Of course. Right. Well, but it starts online.
Sure.
Right.
Although that's the next step, isn't it? Let's go on a date. You be on your computer. I'll be on mine.
Well,
and let's have a date.
Hopefully not. That
no,
wouldn't
I'm
work
kidding.
Out well.
Right. Right. But OK. Right. So it starts online. 50% of your clients come in and they met their first date online, or 50% are meeting them through friends or at parties. What's the percentage?
So most are doing online dating.
Seriously,
that I see.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's going on? What happens when they finally meet? They go on these dates?
So we can even back up to before they meet, right? Because the online dating platform offers a vehicle to kind of continue this distance from vulnerability.
Right.
Right? Okay. So I have clients who are on Tinder, on Grindr, and it's helpful to explore, well, what are you actually looking for? Because you're on a platform that's not about meaningful connection. It's not set up for that.
Right. So it reinforces the idea of selling yourself as a certain way.
Right. And inhibits real connection.
Sure. So right off the bat, when you show up on the actual date, you're showing up with, you know, an expectation of somebody who fits this profile, and you actually might be very different than that.
Sure. So that's the first thing that we talk about in therapy when someone's bringing up dating. What are you looking for, and what vehicle are you using to try to find it? Because you might be looking for something in particular that you're less likely to find on a more superficial app.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a great opportunity.
It is.
The dating to counter your typical social profile and your behavior socially, to actually practice on a dating site being real. I'm going to try being real here first.
And we're going to talk more about dating in the second half of the show. For now, we're going to take a short musical break. But we want to hear from you millennials out there. What is your struggle? What do you feel defines this generation? Or are you related to a millennial and you want to weigh in? The number to call, 212-757-5555. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. We'll be back after this.
different is the city I live in, the city of angel. Lonely as I am, together we cry. I drive on the streets 'cause she's my companion. I walk through the hills 'cause she knows who I am. She sees my good deeds and she kisses the wind. And I never worry, now that is a lie. Not on
Peppers here on WBAI 99.5 FM, and we wanted to play that just because we found the lyrics to be pretty touching. You want to hit us with that, Kevin?
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend. It's hard to believe that there's nobody out there. It's hard to believe that I'm all alone. And that's what you're finding, isn't it, in a lot of these millennials, that they feel all alone.
Yeah, they feel
when
they feel all alone.
Right. When sharing them is what will actually help them connect, because they'll find that there's someone to meet them on the other side.
We have a millennial on the line right now. Bruno, thanks for calling in.
Hi.
Hey, Bruno.
Hi, Bruno.
Yeah, so, hi. A longtime WBAI listener, and I'm just...
Great.
I'd just like to ask if there's, because I grew up in a household where my parents weren't afraid to, tell me about the world and how dark it was. Mm-hmm. So I grew up having this kind of polarizing view of the world, and it kind of led to me having a little bit less self-confidence and stuff. And I was wondering if there are any tactics you would recommend
Wow.
to like kind of work around that, because I'm seeing a therapist right now, and it's just, it's kind of like you kind of want to figure out how to fix that issue.
Sure, sure. Are you, do you have friends that are in a similar condition, or do you, you know, see them succeeding and feel that you're not?
A mixture of both. I'm an artist, so you tend to do that, just kind of naturally look at other people. It's gotten better now that I feel I see myself improving, but it used to be like that a lot. Now it's a little bit better, but yeah, it still is. I see a lot of friends improving in their own art, and I'm like, oh, darn it, I should be improving even more. I have to work harder towards this.
Okay, so one thing I want to ask about is, when you see your friends improving, I wonder if that makes you feel like they haven't gone through the same struggles.
I guess, see, I've definitely had that idea in my head, and I've always kind of tried to fight it, because, like, of course they have issues, you know, like, that's, everyone has their problems, and there's no way they could have gotten to where they are without struggling.
Right.
But I think that there's always that feeling like you said, like, always having to be an expert on things, that I always have to try to fight, because I know that I'm only 18. I can't be perfect at 18. I mean, Jesus Christ. But
that's a good sign. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times when someone sees a friend's success, they forget about all the work their friend had to do to get there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think also because of the social media nature, a lot of that, the nitty-gritty stuff gets left out, and we get left with a very image-conscious generation that just kind of presents achievements and accomplishments. And so it's, like you said, Panthi, it's very easy to forget or overlook that, you know.
I have one last question for Bruno. Do you feel isolated, Bruno?
A lot, actually. Like, it just, yeah. I mean, that's kind of, I think a lot of people in at least my age group, where like you tend to feel that a lot, and now I'm coming out of my shell, and I really hate the idea of online dating personally, because I feel like it's so ingenuine. Yeah. But that, even like in dating in general, it's hard for my generation, because you tend to see, and even with me, like you tend to find somebody who you find really attractive, but a lot of the time it's very much like at face value.
Right.
And a lot of people in my generation are not really,
Bruno, you
able
sound,
to like.
You sound ripe for you sound ripe for a group, and you're echoing a lot of the themes we're talking about. And you sound ripe for a group, because this kind of stuff, you know, you just sounds like you had support enough from your parents, and that now is a time for you to connect with people in a similar situation.
Bruno, we want to talk to a couple other callers, especially about dating. But thank you for the call, Bruno. Keep listening. Keep calling us. Definitely dating and millennials, it's a huge issue made complicated by, you know, the social media and the online dating. And so we're going to take another call on dating. And we have another millennial who wants to tell us a little bit about dating. But Panthi, with your clients, what do you see as the biggest struggle with dating?
Sure. So there are so many unofficial rules of dating that people abide by that actually run counter to connecting.
Like?
So, for example, don't answer texts too quickly. Don't act too excited. Act cool and nonchalant. Be confident. So when you have that expectation and you feel nervous before a date,
right?
Because of course you will, right?
Yes.
You think of that as bad. You think of that as a negative. Instead of par for the course. You're supposed to feel nervous. You're taking a risk to connect. That's a big deal.
Beautiful.
We got a caller who wants to talk about dating. We have LA on the line. Did I pronounce that right?
Hello?
Hi. Hey. How are you doing?
Oh, my name is G. No, this is, I'm not LA. I'm a person that has about 9 to 8 millennial nieces and nephews.
No, tell us about them.
Tell us about it.
Okay, so one of the things I find really is that this addiction of labels, it's like, to me, it's like, okay, I'm over 40. It's like any generation.
Right.
When you have, it's like pinning the tail on the donkey. You have too many labels. People try to fit, whether it's color. It's so many labels that we have. Now, everything is labeled. So I try to get them to find some balance. And they talk to me about, they say, I'm glad, you know, I'm glad I got somebody to talk to. But sometimes when you hit a nerve or speak a truth that they really feel that you can relate to, and them at the same time, sometimes they back off and they'll come back. But I tell them a lot of times it's about wisdom and having some balance. And I find that a lot of the games they had played a part, because we had games like Monopoly and everything where people were together.
Right.
And they had a lot of these games that they played separate. So I find that, because I learned from them too, that it played a big part in that. And I find that we actually do have a lot in common, because when I was younger, you know, it's named different, but I had the same feelings and the same shame and so forth of growing up I went through, so I try to help them from there to grow up and be real about things. And yeah. I also ask them, what results do they want from what they're doing? And that helps them to kind of think about themselves. And then the last thing is I appreciate them coming to me. And I also try to unplug them to say, well, sometime notice the sun. Notice a tree.
Yes,
notice things outside of a line. Get offline to notice, to be connected. And, you know, I think it helps.
Jane.
Thank you guys for the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
those
for
are
calling.
Perfect comments.
And the number to call here is 212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555.
So he brought up some good points. He talked about this addiction to labels, and I wanted to know more about that.
Yes, right.
So one idea I have is that if we're struggling with our identity, any label that we can apply helps us feel more grounded and secure.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. I would have loved to have heard some examples of the labels. But he sounded like such a grounded man. He's perfect to go to for some advice, some counsel. So.
For those of you who had called in earlier and got cut off, we are working with a new phone system. We talked about it last week. We have a great new process that allows us to take more calls. But again, as everything in life, you know, it's a little bit more complicated, a little bit more advanced, and we're all working together here at the Positive Mind Center to learn that so we can more efficiently take your calls. So if you were on hold and you got cut off, do call us back, 212-757-5555.
Okay. So another thing that G talked about that I really liked is that he talked about sharing his struggles, that he dealt with this shame when he was younger too, and I think that's amazing that he's able to talk to his nieces and nephews about it.
Yes, it's a terrific consolation for younger people to hear a grown-up talk about their own struggles.
Right.
And from an authentic place.
Right. He's sharing his vulnerability. That models for them that it's okay for them to be vulnerable also.
Yes. I think he was a great caller. He's perfect. So thank you for calling us, G, and keep calling us back. So vulnerability. I mean, how do you practice vulnerability? I was thinking about preparation for the show. You know, Brené Brown did this great TED Talk on vulnerability. And she says it often just derives from being disconnected. I'm just not connected to anybody. And then there's a sense of shame. So how can we help people get connected? I mean, vulnerability is like hitting a home run. Is there any intermediate steps that people could take besides vulnerability or on the way to vulnerability? I was thinking one thing would be to hold somebody's hand. I mean, it's a stretch, right? But, you know, since you're bringing up something delicate, if you're actually touching the other person's hand and say, look, this is not easy for me to talk about, and start with that, this is not easy for me to talk about. What do you think?
So that's a way to bridge the gap.
Say more.
Vulnerability means you are taking a risk to bridge the gap between you and another person, right? So holding hands, that's automatically going to connect you to each other in that way. Maybe that can make it a little safer to share something emotional.
Right. Let's try it now. Here.
Well, caveat, that's with someone you already have an established relationship with.
Or actually anybody. I mean, the vulnerability, we could try vulnerability anywhere. I mean, it might feel, you know, easier to do it with friends or brothers, you know, or sisters, or you know, to practice vulnerability that way before you try it on a date.
Sure. So that's a way to ease the road to vulnerability. So some examples of vulnerability might be as simple as telling a friend, I just started this new job and I feel like I really suck at it. And and asking them if they have had a similar experience. What's it like at your job? What was it like when you first started out?
Right. So start by admitting some weakness, not, you know, present my best self or whatever that might be, but start by saying I'm starting to feel a little inadequate or not up to it. And what do you, you know, what would you say in return?
Right. Well, so that paves the road for them to share an experience when they also felt maybe like an imposter or felt inadequate.
And I think the vulnerability aspect is so important. And our last caller kind of alluded to the difference in games that his generation played, which are more cooperative group games.
Sure.
And then the newer generation, I think he was implying video games. And I think the concept of the screen, whether it's the TV screen, the computer screen, the cell phone screen, all the devices, they're like a shield, a wall, a barrier that in some ways keeps us from getting to that intimate, vulnerable place. And I think that's
reinforces the isolation.
Let's try to take a few more calls. We're coming towards the end of the hour, but we have Lena on the phone. Lena, thanks for calling us today.
Hello. One more try. Lena, are you there?
Okay. We lost Lena.
We dropped the call.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. It's 212-757-5555.
You know, if you numb your vulnerability, you're going to numb everything else also. Right? So if you're feeling vulnerable, that's a good sign. I mean, if you're feeling anxious about going on a date, I mean, that's not ideal, but that's normal. That's okay.
Right. That is normal. It means that you're open to connecting. If you're closed off, if you have your shiny armor on, you can't connect.
Yeah. Shiny armor. Right. Shiny armor.
Right. So sometimes when people talk about confidence, what they're really talking about is disconnection.
Say more.
So they're talking about feeling safe, not taking risks.
Right. And that's a good, you know, people like to feel their confidence.
Right.
So it's hard to persuade them to give that up.
Right. But the payoffs are huge. Brené Brown talks about, from her research, right, she talks about learning that vulnerability is the birthplace of connection.
Yeah, I believe it is. I agree with that. The problem is how to do it in the crunch time. You know, it's great to do it, and when you've had the experience of it, it feels wonderful. You wonder why I don't do this more often. But it's hard in the moment to actually get there. So I think she's right, but
sure it is.
I think we need steps.
Practice.
Let's try to take a few quick calls before the end of the hour, so if our callers could try to keep it brief. We have Ben on the line. Ben, are you there?
Hi, yeah, I'm here.
Hey,
hi.
Ben.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, wow, okay, so it's the first time I'm calling in.
Cool.
Great show.
Are you a millennial?
And, yeah, I'm 25, so I think that technically makes me a millennial.
Yep.
So tell us what resonates with you.
Well, all the stuff you're telling me reminds me of, you know, things I've been going through and things that I see with my friends. I feel as though I'm in a good place, so I'm growing. I'm a musician right now. I'm a musician always, and I'm a teacher, a music teacher, and I'm finding, you know, in this complicated world, it's tough to, like, you know, be successful, especially, you know, the music industry is very tough.
Yeah.
So, I feel that.
You picked a doozy to reinforce these character traits that millennials are struggling with. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah, as a musician?
Yes.
I feel as though music for me is a place where I am very vulnerable because I pour, like, everything into my song. And I think that, for me, is, like, it's very helpful. It's, like, how I express myself, and the music is, I do it through the music.
Right. Art is a great avenue for expressing our inner vulnerability.
And that helps you adjust and it helps you feel more grounded in the world. You have a place to share vulnerability, to access your vulnerability. You find that helps you? If you didn't have that, you'd be, you know, struggling even more?
Probably. Yeah, I think it gives me everything because, you know, especially my closest friends are the people I play in bands with. So I'll play them all the songs I'm working on, and, you know, I feel as though they really listen to all my lyrics and the music, and we connect.
Right.
So I think all my closest connections are with my musical friends in that aspect of my life.
I understand.
That makes sense, right?
So you at least have a group that you can share with. And that must be a great counter to a lot of the issues that millennials are dealing with. Ben, we have another call, so we thank you for calling and keep calling us.
Thank you very much.
Take care. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah,
anytime. Don't mention it. Yeah, it's great to hear from millennials. We want to take a call right now from someone who's actually a parent of two millennials who gave us a call, wanted to weigh in on the subject. So we have Joe on the line. Joe, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good. Thanks for calling in. You're a parent of two millennials.
That's correct.
And what's your perspective?
I don't know in we're older parents. Wife was 38 with our first and 42 with our second. And I don't get a sense of contribution and a sense of reciprocity. It just seems like they just seem to think that it's just coming to them.
Right. Mm. So you feel like they're entitled, they're not grateful.
I don't, to not have a sense of contribution and a sense of reciprocity, I don't think is going to promote them feeling great and have that mental health that we're speaking about.
Yeah. It's a good point, Joe, and it's a very common knock on the millennial generation. You're far from the first person to say this, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering, Panthea, what you think about what Joe said, especially he's got a pretty good perspective as a parent.
Right. So that's a common experience that people have in relation to millennials. So I'm curious, you said both of your children are millennials. How old are they?
Our daughter's 25 and our son is 22.
Okay.
Our son is still at home with us.
Okay.
You know, you mentioned Brene Brown. Wonderful talks on shame and vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, do we have the courage as parents to put them out there and get on the field and to experience the ups and downs?
Great question.
Right. You know, that takes vulnerability. That takes a lot of courage for you to let them go mm-hmm. out there and to let them make mistakes, because I'm sure that would be painful for you to see as a parent.
Yes, so it really lies here. I mean, I see neighbors across the street, they drive their children to the bus stop. If it's raining, they drive them 30 feet to the bus stop.
Right.
If the lights go out, they're going to Hawaii. You know, if the lights go out for a couple of days, well, but we're laughing. But where they have an opportunity.
No, I understand.
Right.
You know,
understand.
To light some candles or, put some logs in a fireplace and warm the house. I mean, my wife and I were both in the military. And, you know, for 8-9 days, we braved not having heat and electric.
So I hope you're able to use your own experiences to share that with your children, to share these insights into what life is supposed to be like.
I think you're I also think you're articulate, Joe, and it sounds like it's something you could bring to them. I love the word reciprocity.
Mm-hmm.
And as a father, to not feel like you're getting any reciprocity coming your way. Has to be pretty painful. You must be frightened for them in a way.
Well, my wife and I grew up very different, so there's a discourse there mm-hmm. in that aspect. And I'm not. I love them dearly, and
of course.
Mm-hmm. I feel I have a job. We have the good Lord has really blessed us with two healthy children, and we have a job that they be. A contribution to this thing called life.
Well, we're all trying to learn, Joe. I want to thank you for the call. I want to get one more caller on, so thanks for listening.
That's good.
Thanks for calling us.
Thank you.
And
best of luck with everything.
We're going to take one more caller right now. You are listening to The Positive Mind, and we've been talking today about millennials with our guest, Panthea Sadapur. She's a therapist here in New York City who pretty much exclusively deals with the millennial generation. Again, we have time for one more call today. Really quickly, we have John on the line. How you doing, John? Can you turn the radio off, please?
John, we lost you.
So reciprocity. I mean, you must feel that even in a session, are they reciprocating to your forays, your attempts to bring them out? Talk about reciprocity, because it's a terrific word. I think he nailed it on the head.
Right. I want to go back to what Joe said. So he's talking about not feeling like his kids are reciprocating, that they're not grateful.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a common complaint that people have about millennials. So I think he's onto something there. What I would wonder is where that's coming from for his kids specifically.
Sure.
So I might think about how they might feel too vulnerable in sharing.
Right.
Even giving requires...
Even showing appreciation.
Right.
Because then I'm what?
That implies need.
Yes.
Right?
And then it also implies debt. Like, I'm going to have to do this again.
Yeah.
You know?
We have one time for one last
very, very short
caller. This is Mike on the line. Mike's a millennial. Thanks for calling in, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
We have maybe 45 seconds.
Sorry, I'll be quick. I just wanted to comment on something that I thought was kind of a thing with millennials more so than other people, especially with the social media, where it's, I feel like it's very common that people invest more into their image of what other people think that they are more so than how they feel about themselves.
Yeah.
So if you can portray yourself as someone that has it all together, maybe you'll become that person.
Sure.
But what I've learned in recent years, so maybe millennials, if you're listening, nobody ever gets their stuff together entirely.
Right.
Like, I have 50-year-old coworkers that are, you know, still trying to get it together. So don't beat yourself up too much. And
beautiful way to close this out, Mike.
Thank you so much for the call today, Mike.
That's beautiful sound.
And you've been listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Our guest, Panthea Sadapur, social worker, therapist here in New York City, Manhattan to be exact.
How can they reach you, Panthea?
Sure. So you can find me on my website, PantheaCounselingNYC.com.
And that's PANTHEA, Panthea Counseling NYC. Mm-hmm. And we're here at the Positive Mind Center. You can find us on West 57th Street, Positive Mind Center, and where you can reach us anytime. For those of you who called in, weren't able to make it, 212-757-4488. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, 1 p.m., only on 99.5 FM, WBAI. I'm Ben Starr with my guest, Panthea Sadapur, and my co-host and partner and colleague, Kevin O'Donohue.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for all your calls. We'll be back tomorrow at 1. Take care.